If you're a small business owner, you already know what it takes to keep everything moving. You're juggling customers, invoices, and about 100 decisions every day. Thankfully, taxes don't have to be one more thing on that list. With Intuit TurboTax, you can get your business taxes done for you with a full-service expert. TurboTax matches you with your dedicated tax expert who knows your industry, understands your business write-offs, and gives you the personalized advice your business deserves. Upload your documents right in the app, hand everything off, and still feel like you're in the loop the whole way through. You can even get real-time updates on your expert's progress right in the app, which makes it so much easier to stay on track. And you can get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com to get matched with an expert today. Only available with TurboTax full service experts.
A lot of other people, and I'm happy for them, they deserved it. But a lot of other people whose tenure was not as long, nor as wide in terms of all the things I did, both in and out of sports for NBC, a lot of people receive a much more fulsome tribute and they deserve every bit of it. I'm happy for them. But that was a little off that it happened that way. And that sort of left me for looking for the ribbon. And maybe in a bit of poetic justice, that ribbon is found right back at 30 Rock, but we'll have to see. Nothing certain yet, but maybe.
Well, that was Bob Costas on the Sports Media Watch podcast last March. And as he hinted, it has come to pass that he will have his grace note at NBC, where he has returned to be the host of its Major League Baseball studio coverage. And that is where we begin the new Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by co-host Armand Brody and producer Derek Futterman. Let's just dive on in because we have a lot to talk about this week. Bob Costas is back at NBC. He will be the host of its Major League Baseball studio show next year, which will be on site from the site of games for Sunday Night Baseball. He will also be a contributor to the NBA and NBC, where he has already voiced a couple of pregame teases this year. There's no additional details on what his NBA role will be, but I would have to imagine that it will extend beyond the pregame teases to maybe include a few live on-air spots, you would think, but nothing has been said to that effect yet. In a conference call about this move on Thursday, Costas pointed out this is an emeritus role. This was originally envisioned as part of his 2012 contract negotiations. It did not come to pass the way that they were expecting at that time. Obviously, we all know the story. Costas ultimately left NBC on not very good terms over a disagreement over Costas's commentary about the National Football League and the concussion crisis and the IOC's, in Costas's exact words, troubling affinity for authoritarian regimes. So that was not a great ending for Bob Costas. He clearly was wounded by the way his NBC tenure ended. That was evident from the conversation that Armand and I had with him last March. And this is an opportunity for him to get what ultimately he deserves, right? This is Bob Costas we're talking about. Bob Costas, his final NBC assignment, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was like the NASCAR season finale from Homestead. And like, it wasn't, you know, there was no celebration. This is the voice of NBC Sports. And look, hey, that kind of stuff happens. Al Michaels' final NBC broadcast, Chargers Jaguars, ultimately he didn't get, as Bob likes to say, the brass band and the parade. And Al obviously didn't get it from ABC, his actual forever home, because he left. But, you know, this is what all the great broadcasters should get. Keith Jackson didn't get a send-off necessarily, because of course, when they did give Keith Jackson his send-off, he came right back, right? So, but for Bob, this is a great opportunity. And I know, obviously, there's a lot of people who don't vibe with Bob. And Bob knows that as well. I think that was obvious from our conversation with him. But look, if you had complaints about his play-by-play on baseball, I don't know that you can really argue that his studio hosting has taken a hit. Armand, your thoughts?
This made me really happy. That's the best way I can put it. This needed to be made right. It did. And Costas knows that, and Rick Cordella knew that. And It's good to see. It's also nice to see that Costas is aware that he's not who he used to be. He's made comments to MLB Network's Tom Verducci, to us, and even in some of the comments from his conference call, he is aware that he is not 1988 Bob Costas. He's aware of the fact that he is not here to be the star. He's here to be, as he said, the role player. He's here to be the sixth man. And I think that takes a lot of self-awareness because not everybody at that age is willing to say, you know what, I'm not who I used to be. But still, his stature within the industry is so strong. And he loves baseball. Everyone knows this. My goodness, how many eulogies of famous baseball players has Bob Costas given over the last few decades? Baseball is his first love. It always has been. It reminds me somewhat, and that's not quite the same thing nearly, but it does remind me somewhat of Dick Enberg getting the chance to do Padres games towards the end of his career. But it's just a nice touch, right? I mean, it's bad to sing so beautifully, sing a great song, and then hit a wrong note, and that be the last note people hear. And so this gives Costas the opportunity to hit that last belt, the belting note, that high tenor note to wrap things up on what's been an extraordinary career. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, no question. And the reality of the matter is that it's not a charity thing NBC is doing, right? I mean, it's nice, and they don't have to bring back Bob Costas. They didn't have to bring back John Tesh. They definitely didn't have to bring back Jim Fagan from the dead. They did not have to do that. But, you know, NBC doesn't have to do any of these things, but this is not just a nostalgia play, right? Now, look, we are all on this podcast fans of Ahmed Fareed, who had that job doing the Peacock Sunday leadoff broadcasts for NBC. And Ahmed is great. He would have been my obvious choice here. But when we talk about Bob Costas and his age, Bob Costas is 74 years old, which by broadcasting and presidential standards is about 14, right? I mean, let's be completely real here. Like 74 is more than enough time to still be somewhat in your prime, particularly when we're talking about the studio, right? You know what's really crazy? Bob is only 15 years older than Scott Van Pelt.
That's interesting to think about. Yeah, that's true though. Scott's almost 60. Yeah.
Scott is closer in age to Bob Costas than he is to any of us, right? Which you would never buy that.
He doesn't feel like it.
He sure doesn't, with all those Aqua Teen Hunger Force references on the air and all that. But, you know, the reality is that Bob is not necessarily so far out of his prime that he's not an asset to what NBC is trying to do. He immediately brings credibility. He immediately brings the experience. And, you know, look, with all due respect to Lauren Shahadi at TBS and obviously Kevin Burkhardt. I mean, Burkhardt is at the stage of his career. You would probably choose him over Costas at this stage of his career. But, you know, really, you can't do much better than Bob Costas for an MLB studio host. I just don't think you can.
NBC has not had Major League Baseball regularly in a very long time, outside of some games here and there through the Peacock package. This was something that I did not even realize was a distinct possibility, bringing Bob Costas on full-time to host the Sunday Night Baseball pregame show. But this is one hell of a move by NBC to make a reintroduction back into the world of baseball in a 3-year contract when Rick Cordella has come on this podcast and said that they'd like to extend that relationship long-term, getting Bob Costas back into the game when the game is getting more popular than ever, but could also face a work stoppage that could definitely impede its future. I think having Costas as a voice on the air every week will be a great thing for baseball fans. And now I'm fascinated to see what NBC does in the broadcast booth to put together the Sunday night crew, because it's no secret that ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball crew has not received the greatest feedback over the last few years. And I think the change now to NBC is something that a lot of people are looking forward to.
Well, I'm quite sure that the other executives, Pitaro, you know, David Burson, they're all probably getting a little annoyed with all the flowers that Rick Cordell has been getting at NBC. Because, look, NBC is just on a roll. They're picking up the rights. They are writing love letters to all of these properties. And it's not just, I mean, the coverage is really good. It's really good. They had a Knicks-Mavericks game on Martin Luther King Day, and the amount of attention they paid to the physical play between Karl Anthony Towns and Dwight Powell so far exceeded anything that you see in the biggest games of the year. And this is what they do all the time. They do obsess a little bit sometimes, like in the game the other day with the Patriots where Mike Vrabel got cut because one of his players was so enthusiastic in congratulating him that Mike Vrabel got cut on the lip. They probably obsessed over that a little bit. But the attention to detail is so far beyond on NBC than on any other network. Baseball will have not been covered as well as NBC is going to cover it. As it, the last time was probably when NBC covered it with Vin Scully. You're going to watch, starting next year on Sunday Night Baseball, the best broadcasts Sunday Night Baseball has probably done since John and Joe, and maybe even beyond that.
And I want to add, David Cone is now no longer working with ESPN, right? His schedule has changed a bit because of ESPN's slate. So could be a lead analyst there, lead game analyst for NBC. I have a lot of confidence based on what NBC has done in other places that they're going to give Major League Baseball the treatment that it deserves. So I'm excited. And Costas fits right in that.
And we're going to see it all over the next month when NBC has that busy February slate with the Olympics, the NBA All-Star Game, and of course, the Super Bowl. Let's just be candid here. NBC is starting to really prove itself as a gold standard in this business. If it wasn't already, it's certainly proving it right now. And it just had another record-setting season of Sunday Night Football, albeit with the obvious Nielsen caveats, and the most viewed game of the NFL divisional round, Rams-Bears. That Sunday night slot, 45.4 million viewers. Just overall, NBC is crushing it right now. And excited to see what they do as we head into their busy February slate.
I got a totally speculative, crazy thought. David Ellison, he's a little off in some ways. He has antagonized Taylor Sheridan. Who's to say he doesn't antagonize Augusta National? Right? Like, I've got a crazy thought. NBC should go for the Masters. Why not? They've got the level of, like, they're in the zone right now over at NBC. Go for the Masters. Go take CBS's lunch money. See if that works out. I actually think that they could. They already have a relationship with Augusta National by way of the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Do you know how much that would pain Jim Nantz if that happened? Come on, John.
Go get Jim Nantz. Go get Jim Nantz, right? Like, they are... They've got some amazing momentum,
John,
at NBC right
you
now.
You know how Jim Nantz rhapsodizes about the I and the CBS Blazer and his 1985 start filling in for Brent Musburger on the College Football Halftime Report back in the day? Come on, John. Jackpot Kansas City. Come on, John.
That's true.
Just remember, Augusta National just added its third media rights partner.
Yes,
first in a long time, Prime Video, now part of the proceeding. So I'd say never say never.
You know, I don't just bring it up to kind of like exaggerate or, I mean, I actually do think NBC should try. I mean, this is the opportunity because I just don't think David Ellison meshes well with certain folks. And, you know, there's a difference in the kind of conservatism the Masters has and the kind of conservatism that David Ellison's about. And it's a bit of oil and water. The Masters is George Will. David Ellison's not really George Will to me. So that's something that popped into my head. But
one more thing, NBC did take the Travelers this upcoming season. It's been reported from CBS. So maybe something starting there in the golf space. We'll see.
Maybe. I know Cordella listens to this podcast. Go try to get the Masters. I'm not kidding. Go out there and see if that's an opportunity because I don't think it's impossible. But let's talk about those ratings for the properties NBC does have. Now, the viewership figures for the conference championship games this past weekend were not out by the time this podcast is published. So we're going to talk about the numbers for the divisional round weekend. Rams, Bears, a tremendous number there. But realistically, any game on any network in that window on divisional round weekend, particularly a game of that quality, was going to do well. The real headline from divisional round weekend to me is obviously ESPN going 50,000 feet overboard with the PR. ESPN out there saying this was the most watched event in ESPN history, Texans Patriots. I mean, obviously, we all know what people mean when they say ESPN. They mean ESPN, the cable network. People are not stupid. They don't say, I'm going to go watch ESPN and then they turn on ABC. They say, I'm going to go watch ABC, or they just don't even mention the network. But when you turn on ABC, you're not going, well, I'm going to go watch ESPN on ABC, if you don't mind. That's just not the way people act. And the fact is that, yes, there was nothing but ESPN branding. It was an ESPN-produced event, but the ESPN announcers, but the majority of that audience was watching on ABC. And so the idea that that counts to the ESPN record books, that you could say, since the network started in 1979, that's absurd. I mean, it's honest to God absurd. So that, to me, was ridiculous. Even the claim that it was the most watched sporting event in the history of Disney. Well, Disney's owned ESPN for 30 years and ABC. ABC and ESPN existed before Disney bought the companies. And ABC had a Monday Night Football game with over 40 million viewers back in 1990. So that was absurd to me, but certainly really good numbers for the divisional round. I don't want to understate it, but everybody was claiming some crazy records that really do not stand up to scrutiny, in my view.
Question about the San Francisco-Seattle number. What are your thoughts on that, John? Buffalo-Denver had a big number from CBS with, all the obvious caveats that we always talk about. I'm trying to understand the thinking behind why that San Francisco-Seattle game was in the slot it was in, other than San Francisco's schedule and travel and things like that. But that 8 o'clock Saturday night spot for San Francisco-Seattle was, it always felt kind of weird for me, even when it came out.
Well, the NFL botched the schedule in a weird way, right? Because they put the Texans on Monday night, the wild card round, they had to put the Texans on Sunday, which meant that the much better game for TV was on Saturday. And we saw the Saturday 4:30 window beating the Sunday 3 o'clock window. That is really rare. Really, I'm not sure it's ever happened before, even when that was a 1 o'clock window in the previous days on the Sunday. So the NFL kind of botched the schedule, but there's really not much you can do to salvage San Francisco against Seattle when it's a blowout like that.
Oh, it was over quickly.
Yeah, it was. Two West Coast markets. That should have been the ESPN window. I mean, I'm surprised that Fox ended up with that and not Rams Bears.
Yeah. I heard you tell Deitch that felt like the 4:30 window. I mean, it had 4:30 Saturday written all over it because you knew that it really was the least intriguing game. I'll say this quickly. I hate the Monday night wild card game. I absolutely despise it. It throws so much off from a scheduling standpoint. If I'm rooting for a team in that slot, I'm just like, we can't win. And it just feels wrong. It feels weird. I'm purely speaking as a fan here. I know there's been a lot of money spent towards that slot, and God bless those who have the ability to pay for it. But it stinks. It really does. I just hate where it fits within the schedule of the postseason. It just does not belong to me.
So, it's interesting you mentioned that, Armand, because Hans Schroeder, of course, said on the Sports Business Journal podcast with Austin Karp, that Monday night window was something that the league views as a better window than 1 o'clock on Saturday. Now, that's the window it replaced, because once they expanded to six wildcard games, that 1 o'clock Saturday window back in 2021, I wouldn't take seriously any of the ratings from 2021, the COVID year. It was 2021, but it was January. So that was the COVID affected year. I wouldn't take seriously those numbers in terms of a comparison to Monday night. I think Saturday at 1, you could do a better number than CBS did that year. But the NFL's position is that the audience is maximized in that Monday night slot. And I think we all know the NFL played Wednesday games to get the biggest audience they could. If it comes down to quality of play versus the biggest number, they're going to choose the biggest number every single time. The two biggest teams remaining, the Buffalo Bills and Chicago Bears, both eliminated. They played in the two most watched windows of the divisional round. I don't think that's a complete coincidence. And the Bears certainly had a great story. It was an incredible play at the end. Couldn't get it done. But the Bills are the team you really regret not having. They were the best draw left in the NFL playoffs. And they had the most famous quarterback left in the NFL playoffs. And that is a bigger determinant of drawing power even than your market. Obviously, Buffalo is a very small market. I don't have high hopes for the Patriots-Broncos, right? The quarterback matchups just matter so much for the NFL. It's really hard to imagine that game doing a great number, although obviously it's the NFL, it's the conference championships, and it's the out-of-home era with big data on top. You'll still see a massive viewership figure, but well below what I think the NFL could have expected in that slot.
Yeah, when Denver wins that game, you had a lot of sports media folks going, that changes things. And I'm sure some execs as well were having some similar thoughts, even if they were not shared. Stars and stories is what you look for. And we are sort of left without much of that based on the teams that are left. I mean, Chicago would have been just scintillating would have been really good, really captivating stuff. Buffalo, my goodness. I mean, they're the lovable losers, right? I mean, and you have the MVP. And people were asking, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week. Would we miss Patrick Mahomes? Would we miss Baltimore? Yeah, you kind of do. I mean, yeah, you do. We will watch by the millions, especially with many people being snowed in and stuck in their homes. But New England, Denver with an unknown second year quarterback who could win MVP, but still unknown, versus a backup. And then on the West Coast, Sam Darnold is not operating at 100%. Versus Matthew Stafford, who is not Tom Brady in terms of flair and panache. It's not quite the same as Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen.
So let me pose you guys the question. $57.7 million was the average of last year's AFC Championship game. It was the most watched AFC Championship game in history. It was, of course, Chiefs-Bills. And that was before the full expansion of out-of-home in the contiguous U.S., before the inclusion of big data as ratings currency. During the regular season, one game came very close to hitting that number. It was Chiefs-Cowboys in Week 13. Of course, Thanksgiving, most watched regular season game of all time on CBS at $57.3 million. Should also note that the Broncos did have one game in the top five most watched of the regular season. It was $29 million in Week 11, but they played the Chiefs, who had four games in the top five. So with all that information and the quarterback matchup, and of course the Nielsen changes, do you see this higher or lower than 57.7?
Well, I think it'll be lower, certainly. The AFC, yeah, the Broncos, absolutely lower, considerably lower, in fact, because it's the early window as well, but last year was $44 million. Now, the real question is, will the Rams-Seahawks get to that level? And I don't think so. It's a rematch of a great regular season matchup on Thursday Night Football, but you know, that Thursday Night Football game is really, really good. And guess what? It didn't come close to the all-time record for TNF, even in a season where obviously all the viewership figures are blessed with several built-in advantages. It didn't come close to a viewership record for TNF. And other games did. Other games did. So, you know, it's a West Coast matchup. Seattle versus LA, right? You know, it would have been really interesting if it had been Dodgers-Mariners in the World Series. Because I think, obviously, the assumption going in was that that would be better than Dodgers-Blue Jays. But obviously, with some, you know, hindsight, I actually think Dodgers-Mariners would have been considerably worse as a draw. Not just because the Dodgers probably win that in five games, but because the fact is, a regional matchup is not ideal. You want to have multiple regions represented. And so I definitely think it'll do well. It'll probably be over $50 million, but I can't see it getting to last year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see how we get to that number. There's so much of the sizzle you're missing in these moments, right? I mean, after Stafford, who do you know? I mean, who really jumps out at you? Sam Darnold certainly does not. You've got these young up-and-coming stars like Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but we don't really know him. Puka Nacua is an extraordinary player, but still not quite a household name yet, but he's certainly on the way. There's just not enough meat on the bone, in my opinion, to move the needle compared to last year's great number that we saw, in particular in the AFC Championship game from a year ago.
And just to give my two cents, I agree with you both, but if we see the ratings attenuated by 5, 6, 7, 8%, you could perhaps make the argument that the decline is really, all things considered equal, even worse. I think maybe the cushion that the new Nielsen methodology provides may make a decline not look as bad as it ordinarily would have if, again, all things were equal.
Of course.
Bit of a soft landing.
No question. I mean, the changes have resulted in viewership figures that were almost certainly down from last year being up 3, 4, 5%. I mean, it's been quite the blessing for the networks and the leagues the past year. So let's talk a little bit about some other football. Nielsen just put this out Thursday. Indiana, during the course of its season, 8.4 million viewers for Indiana games throughout the regular season and playoff. How about that? Obviously, that's going to happen when you win the national championship. But when you talk about 8.4 million viewers per game for Indiana football, if you had said that 5, 10 years ago, you would have assumed, I don't know, I mean, that college football was averaging Super Bowl level viewership for most games. And that's the reason why Indiana games are averaging 8.4 million. Look, the reality is that the Hoosiers' run does seem to have captivated the audience because the National Championship of College Football averaged 30.1 million viewers on ESPN, far in excess of what I believe any of us thought it was going to draw, especially coming off of the record low semifinals, the least watched semifinals in the history of the CFP, immediately followed by the most watched national title game, at least officially, since 2015. And frankly, even with the Nielsen methodology changes, this almost certainly beat most of those national title games over that particular span. Now, if you go back to like 2001 or whatever, yeah, those games probably had more viewers, all things being equal. But if you go back to, you know, certainly last year, 2021, you know, this game definitely beat most of the recent games and probably by a considerable amount. Armand, obviously, I don't think any of us expected this kind of audience, but also I don't think we expected that kind of game. It was a much better game than anyone thought it would be.
Yeah, I wonder, and I want to sort of toss this back at you, I wonder how much the intrigue of is Miami back and Michael Irvin and Ray Lewis and some of the legends gone by, the connection there that the networks try to make with figures of the past. Now, granted, let me make this clear. The Indiana story in and of itself, it's pretty remarkable. I think Fowler called it a century of futility coming to an end or something along those lines. That was a pretty nice line from Chris. But the story in and of itself is pretty incredible. We just talked about stars and stories. But I also wonder if maybe that little extra boost of seeing the familiar name of Miami may have added a little bit of interest in the game as well. What do you think, John?
I think it's entirely possible. I mean, the fact is, Miami is one of the great brands in all of college football, and they carry with them an interest level that is beyond the game of football. It's cultural. They have a cultural relevance that most other programs do not have that has sustained itself over 25 years of mediocrity. So that's pretty amazing, you know, and we've seen it with other teams. You know, worth noting, Florida State was back more than a decade before Miami was back, and they actually won the national title game back in 2014. But you saw elevated viewership for that game.
I did that in part to set you up for that comment, sir.
All right. Well, it worked out. It worked out. But look, the simple fact is when you have schools like Miami, when you have schools like Florida State, when you have schools like Alabama, which Alabama was back when it won in 2010. Like people forget Alabama had been mediocre for years. They were back. When schools like that are back, that is when you will see a nice bump. Because people miss seeing those schools, the teams that they get really sick and tired of, well, you tend to miss seeing those teams be good. There's exceptions. Obviously, the LeBron Lakers, when they won, it was in the bubble. So, you know, the Yankees, frankly, I don't know if the Yankees were as big of a deal when they made it back as the Dodgers were. I tend to believe the Dodgers actually probably were. I'm of the mind that the Dodgers have kind of supplanted the Yankees as the most relevant team in baseball. I mean, I guess, obviously, right? But as a general rule, when teams that have kind of been great stop being great and then start being great again, with exceptions like the Lakers in the bubble, you're going to see a nice bump, I think, most of the time.
I never saw 30. I mean, not at all. I did not see 30 coming. I mean, plus, Indiana had, I mean, the story was there, but the way they destroyed Alabama, I would have thought it would have also put some doubt in people's minds as to whether the game would be close or not, which would have discouraged them from wanting to attend. But I will say this, it is truly one of the greatest stories we've ever seen in the history of sports in this country over the last 100 years. I mean, Indiana just laughingstock. I mean, unbelievably terrible for many, many years. At the bottom, the basement of the Big Ten, getting stomped on by Ohio State and Michigan year after year after year after year. And to have this kind of a turnaround, it's pretty remarkable. And just, it is a reminder. Sometimes you do need to stop just for a moment, I think, and appreciate the beauty of sports, how you can get something like this to happen. Unfortunately for Miami fans, it came at their expense, but the story in and of itself on its face, it's pretty incredible.
Let's just note this. Latest college football national championship game in history, exclusively on cable, when people are cutting the cord, albeit it is available direct to consumer, without a program that has that same prestige on the national level as the last two champions in Ohio State and Michigan. And next year, the game gets added to ABC. That number could be going up.
But let me ask you about that, because the game is January 25th. How late are we going to go with this? And will the fans follow? I mean, obviously being on ABC helps, but I mean, I'll be curious to see how fans follow this, because it's getting later and later and later. And I do wonder if fans are fully aware of all the changes that college football is going to keep going through and how it will affect their scheduling.
I wonder if last year was harmed by Inauguration Day. Because, you know, last year was on Inauguration Day. That's a huge day of news, right? I remember I had tweeted about it like a few months earlier and people got mad at me for trying to figure out why the national championship was on Inauguration Day. It's like, obviously, that's competition. And, you know, Ohio State and Notre Dame, 22.1, that's an awful number for that matchup if you understand the context of how this game typically does. Makes me wonder if, you know, I mean, obviously, this was a real increase in my view. I don't think Inauguration Day is an 8 million viewer difference. But, you know, it makes me wonder about whether maybe last year was a bit depressed. And one thing I will say, don't take for granted the idea that the viewership will be higher next year. Because it's not going to be, not only is it later, not only is it possible that it won't be as good a matchup, it's also not on Martin Luther King Day. And Martin Luther King Day is a holiday. It's not a big family gathering holiday, but it's a holiday. And I do wonder if maybe that played some kind of role here as well. Because, you know, I mean, it's not an ordinary Monday. You don't have anyone struggling to get back from work. 7:30, that's 4:30 on the West Coast. On a regular work day, you're not going to be there for the start of the game. So I do wonder if the MLK Day holiday helped. And I do think, I guess I'll put it to you, Armand, does this 30 million viewer audience put lie to all of the concerns about the state of the college football playoff?
No, I don't. We're going to get back here next year, I think. There'll be some more noise. And if ESPN has anything to say about it with the way they cover the sport, there'll be some cooked up controversy about something. I don't think you rest on your laurels here. I mean, anything could happen next year. And then, of course, there's this constant talk about expansion, which to me just continues to muddy the waters a bit. College football is not home free here by any stretch of the imagination. And I think what we can expect to continue is just change and inconsistency. And I don't think that's changing anytime soon.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the reality of the matter is the viewership is up 4% for the full playoff, considering all the Nielsen changes. That's almost certainly down. And I think that, look, they're doing their best. I got to give them credit, I guess, for finding a way to expand this to 12 teams. I think the expansion was good on the field because if not for the expansion, they would have just found a way to give Alabama and Georgia, you know, two of those spots, I'm sure. I mean, granted, not this year. This year is a pretty clearly defined top four, but you get my point. They would have found some way, you know, Miami made it. They made it to the title game. They clearly were the second best team. They proved that with their play on the field, beating the teams that they beat. So it's good that it expanded, but you're going to have a tough time making this work consistently, especially as the season gets later and later and later. Well, we talked about the college football playoff national championship going to ABC next year, and it'll be the first national title game on broadcast television since 2010. It is unbelievable that ESPN managed to keep that cable exclusive for 16 years. There are people who will be playing who will have no working memory of that game ever being on broadcast TV. Of course, if you're 18, you don't really even know what broadcast TV is anyway. But nonetheless, that's pretty amazing. Of course, ABC has its fair share of marquee sporting events, and really the one that has defined the network on an annual basis over the past 20 years or so has been the NBA Finals. Well, this year's NBA Finals schedule was pretty notable to me, because the NBA has made some obvious changes, a league source telling me that those changes are in response to the World Cup. We talked about it on the podcast, I think. Maybe it was me on the Deitch podcast. But there is a USA FIFA World Cup match on Friday, June 12th, when you would normally have Game 4 of the NBA Finals. The NBA doesn't want that smoke. They have changed their final schedule to start on the Wednesday in the first week of June, not the Thursday. And because of that adjustment, just like how baseball loses out on a Sunday World Series game because they don't want any part of the NFL, the NBA will have no Sunday game in the NBA Finals this year to avoid the World Cup on that Friday night. Armand, what are your thoughts?
Man, Sunday night is such, it's the ultimate television night, you know? And it's first time since, what, 05 that they're not starting on Thursday except for 2011 and the COVID years. It's been a consistent theme that the final starts on Thursday. This one's going to take a little time for me to wrap my head around. Saturday night championship games for the NBA just feels weird. That feels weird. Friday has always felt weird to me. I mean, I'm so used to Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. That's sort of been the rhythm that I've gotten accustomed to over my years of watching that I don't know, man. I got some mixed feelings about this. I understand it, but Sunday night is a night for television and you want your biggest events, even against the World Cup, in my opinion. I wonder if this is the best decision, the wisest decision to make, because I think that the juice is still worth the squeeze.
I would have preferred if I was running things, you know, the NBA moved up the start of the finals by one day. If you move it up by 4 days, start on Sunday, May 31st, you still avoid that World Cup match and you get two Sundays out of it, game one and game four. You still have the Saturday game, but frankly, I think that would have been the way to go. But I assume that would have resulted in too many changes to the rest of the playoffs. And frankly, if you're the NBA, you know, the finals is just one series. The playoffs is your entire 2-3 month showcase. That's the most important time of your season from a rating standpoint. So I will say this, the Sunday game, game two of this past year's finals did not do well. It was the least watched game of the series. The Sunday game two, also not a particularly compelling game. If you're the NBA, you could argue that, hey, look, what matters most is the quality of the game. So just look at that World Series. That schedule is awful for TV. 4 out of the 7 games are on Friday and Saturday nights. It is a dreadful schedule for TV. But if the games are good, doesn't matter what day they're on. So if you're the NBA, really the most important thing for your ratings in the finals, get a good series. Because last year was good, but it was like Spurs Pistons good, where it was competitive. Some of the games were exciting. But, you know, I mean, realistically, if you didn't enjoy it, I'm not going to say you don't like basketball. You need a series that's good, not eat your vegetables.
Let me say this. Right now, you're looking at Detroit OKC as your top seeds here in each conference. That ain't setting my heart on fire at all. So I don't know where, as we go forward, I don't know where your sizzle comes from here because, I mean, New York's a 3-seed. Maybe you have something there. Maybe they take that next step finally and get over the hump after losing to Indiana in the conference finals last year. But I'm not terribly encouraged about what the possibilities could be for in terms of viewership. I mean, obviously, we got months to go, but we're taping now, so I'm talking about it now. That's my perspective.
And something that's very interesting is that the NHL has not announced its schedule for the Stanley Cup final. This Stanley Cup final will be on ESPN and ABC. Similar time of year. I'd be very curious to see how the NHL, if the NHL does this, goes to counter-program against the FIFA World Cup, or does the NHL try its hand at competition? I think that'll be a fascinating thing to watch after the Stanley Cup. Did not do well last year, despite it being a really good series, but definitely struggled on TNT.
What'll interest me, because, you know, this NBA schedule, they were avoiding the World Cup, but it also results in them avoiding that UFC fight on the White House lawn, which is a real wild card. I have no idea how that's going to do. It's an unprecedented sporting event, a very bizarre kind of concept. I don't think anyone would have ever thought you'd see this. And it's on a Sunday night. It's on CBS. And that's going to be interesting. That's going to be the UFC on the White House lawn going up against Sunday Night Baseball. And I would have to assume there'll be a Stanley Cup final game that day, too. That will be an interesting night.
And you know that UFC event will be a spectacle. It will be hyped and treated with a great deal of attention, which could make things all the more interesting from a viewership standpoint.
Speaking of that day in June, June 14th, that is going to also be a day when ABC airs a Major League Baseball game, the first of 3 that will be on ABC in the summer. Kind of a surprise. We know ABC has had the right to air Major League Baseball games in previous ESPN agreements, but that was never really exercised except for one time. But ABC will have a game on June 14th. They'll have one on June 27th, and then they'll have another one in August. And those will be part of ESPN's new rights deal, all part of a Major League Baseball schedule that includes more games on broadcast TV. Thank goodness. You'd have to go back, I think, to the Baseball Network of the mid-90s to find the last time there were this many. Not quite as many as what the NBA's got in its media rights deal, but considering that about a year ago, nobody even thought MLB would be changing its media rights deals, this is a pretty significant increase in inventory over the year.
It's fascinating to think that there was a time when the entire division series was on TBS. TBS had the entire LDS, the NLDS and the ALDS, all on cable, all on TBS to see that. And that was only, that was 18, 19 years ago starting, which is not that long ago when you really think about it. So to look at where we were then and now look at where we are with all of these games being on broadcast, I tell you, it makes my little old heart feel pretty good. Turning on all I need, John, I just need some antennas. I need some rabbit ears. It's a little bit of static. That's all I need, baby. Let's go back to the 1990s. I have such a, it's a bit of a nostalgia thing for me, but it'll be good. If we can just get Al Michaels doing an ABC game with Jim Palmer or somebody, I don't know. But good for them. Let's get maximum eyeballs on the product. I'll be watching.
I'm just thinking to myself this year, how important is ABC to ESPN's overall sports strategy? I mean, right now they're moving those ABC games for Major League Baseball. We've learned at Sports Media Watch are based on overall schedule availability. So I'd be curious to see if more games go in that direction. I know ESPN, the main ESPN channel is the primary part of that rights deal. But just think as well, the NFL season, those simulcasts of Monday Night Football will continue. The Super Bowl is going to be on ABC. Of course, you've got the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Final, and a lot of other sports. So I think it's imperative that those two networks are kind of coexisting right now. It's a real advantage ESPN has to have that broadcast presence.
The shift to broadcast is well underway, and it is fascinating to watch. After all those years, David Stern tearing the NBA away from broadcast, moving to cable, all the conversations about broadcast television dying, and here we are with as strong a broadcast presence in relative to the major sports as I can remember in quite some time. So the shift is on.
128 total games, or actually 126, because Fox is not going with their usual assortment of 26 windows for MLB this year. But well over 120 games between MLB, NBA, and NHL on broadcast TV this season, in more than double what that number was 4 years ago. Well, yeah, the state of sports on broadcast TV, it's just something we haven't seen in a long time, and it's very welcome. One quick note I will say, NBC with their Sunday night, year-round Sunday night sports, there's no week that I can see between Sunday and like July where NBC does not have a Sunday night sporting event. And one of the exceptions this year is August 23rd. On August 23rd, NBC does not have Sunday night baseball because ESPN has the Little League Classic in that window. That week, there is a Fever Sky WNBA game set for 7 o'clock. No network announced yet because the WNBA has not announced networks. Wouldn't it be something if NBC kept its streak of Sunday night sports alive with the Fever and the Sky? Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese assuming they're healthy and assuming, of course, that there is any WNBA season. That caught my eye in the WNBA schedule release. There's no other sensible option for that Fever Sky game on August 23rd other than NBC, because as I said, ESPN will be airing the Little League Classic, and obviously ABC's not going to air it. Honestly, I don't think CBS still has WNBA rights. I have asked on multiple occasions and heard nothing, and frankly, my belief has always been the WNBA has the right to sign two contracts outside of the NBA media rights deal. Well, that would be ION, which we know has already renewed. The other one, wouldn't it be Versant with USA Network? So that would be what I would think, because they are completely mum on whether CBS even has any WNBA rights left after last season. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Another busy week in sports media. We'll be back with more stuff down the line. Thank you to Armand. Thank you to Derek. And thanks to all of you for listening.